Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio show's page is where we put the podcast, as well as on SoundCloud and iTunes. And we're now on, I believe it's pronounced Stitcher. And that's a new one for us, and we're excited about that. We're in the process of getting on TuneIn Radio, so you'll be able to pick us up pretty much anywhere and everywhere. You can go to richarddugan.com. The homepage has got a lot of good information there, and so we are hoping that you will avail yourselves of that. If you'd like to support this radio broadcast, we are always greatly appreciative of any support that you can give. Energetic is wonderful. Financial is even better because it helps us to continue moving forward. Never, ever will I ever use, as I heard in my first 15 years of broadcasting, if you don't support the broadcast, we're going to take it off the air because we just can't keep going. If I can't afford to keep the program going, I will take it off, but it is not dependent upon you. All I'm asking is if you'd like to support it, if you like what we're doing, hey, we can use all the help we can get, and we're here to support one another. And if you can do that, that'd be terrific. Like I said, good thoughts, good energy, and some coin as well. If you can do that, we have a PayPal account that you can contribute through. Not a nonprofit, folks. So this is not tax deductible. It's just supporting the work that we are doing. And again, I am very grateful to everyone who has supported up to this point. And as we go into 2019, I'm also looking for some incredible things to happen for this radio broadcast. And for those of you who didn't hear the interview a few weeks ago with my guest when we were talking about dreams, then you're not going to know what I'm about to say. And all I'm going to say is 800,000. That's right, 800,000. Today's program is kind of interesting because it deals with a subject that I get asked about a lot. I'm 58, going on, I think, 18. And we're going to talk about something that I joke about primarily with a lot of folks when they talk about, I mean, I work with a lot of folks here, programmers who are, quote unquote, retired. And yet they do their own programs, which we're also grateful for. And I say, the only retiring that I'm going to do is on my Volvo. If I need to replace the front tires, I'll do that. If I need to replace the rear tires, I'll do that. As far as I'm concerned personally, and I would hate to be the person who had to deal with this, but they're going to have to peel my cold, dead carcass off of the console. Because I hope that I'm doing this for another at least 42-plus years. I have to outlive my great-grandmother who lived to be 100. But a lot of folks, we're going to talk to a woman today who is basically working on a rather exciting concept that has been for quite a while, dealing with building blocks for the new retirement. This is an easy interactive 8-step guide for a retirement with meaning, purpose, and fun. Joan Tabb, thank you so much for joining us. You're also the author of Great in 8 Job Seeking Skills. Thanks for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on. And it's interesting to see how you talk about your later years, and there's this negative connotation about retirement, and I think a lot of people feel it. And it's because the models that we've had up until now have been kind of negative, passive, of people sitting on the porch just playing golf, maybe playing with their grandkids. But basically, they're out to pasture.
Well, now, let me ask you a quick question in regards to retirement. You talked about this paradigm, if you will, of retirement. Mm-hmm. As far as the modern era, okay, mm-hmm. in the last 2,000 years, just to use a number, mm-hmm. when did retirement begin to be a paradigm in our social structure?
Yeah. That opens it up to a very good discussion. Thank you for that question. We really didn't have retirement in our world. For thousands of years, people worked and then they died. That's just the way it was. Okay, this idea of retirement, especially in our culture, didn't start until the 1930s and 40s. And it was interesting when they instituted Social Security in the late 30s, early 40s, they set it up for you to receive Social Security when you were 65.
Yeah.
But do you know what the average lifespan was, how long people lived then?
I think it was somewhere either the late 40s or early 50s.
Well, close. It was about 57.
Okay.
So in other words, most people didn't live long enough to claim that to Social Security.
Yeah.
So it's only in our generation, I'm a peer of yours, it's only in our generation that we're living such long and healthy lives.
Well, long maybe. When I read that long and healthy, that the baby boomer generation,
right?
And then I started thinking about the next generation behind us, and I'm thinking, well, I think we're going to be back to death before 60 because the generations behind us, they are not. I mean, look at the level of obesity just in this country alone.
All that entails.
Go ahead.
But what I'd like us to focus on for this discussion is the baby boomer generation, because they're huge numbers. About 10,000 are retiring every day. There's a lot of us who are living longer and healthier, and I'm talking about the new paradigm that we need. And I actually have a new name for it. I've trademarked the name because I feel like it's a new phenomenon, and it's revitalment. It's an opportunity for new beginnings. And that's what these building blocks really point to. I've done the heavy lifting for my readers and my workshop participants in that I researched this for 3 years, and then I interviewed over 100 people, 100 very vital people in their late 50s to their 90s. And I learned the eight areas, well, they're really seven areas, and one is the action plan that you put together, but seven areas that you can consider to really construct a life with a lot more meaning, purpose, and fun. For instance, I hear you talking about, you love this broadcasting show. You love bringing new ideas to people,
right?
That's
okay.
You live for it, let's face it.
I do.
And you plan on doing it for the next 40 years because it excites you so much.
Yeah.
I came into my life purpose after about 20 years in the corporate setting as a leader at Apple, 3Com, the big high-tech companies.
Whoa.
And what I came to realize is the joy that I got was not so much marketing and training these high-tech products and how many we sold, but I loved empowering the people I worked with. And especially as I would grow my staff, I loved empowering people. So I then left that corporate world and became an executive and a career coach. And it was while I was doing that work that I discovered that my clients who were in their 50s and 60s were looking out at this current retirement paradigm, and it was not matching what they felt inside.
Yeah.
They didn't see models of how that represented how they could possibly live. And that's why I sought out those 100 people who were living very vital lives. And this book is really set up for people who do have the level of health and the precious gift of time, and how they can construct a much more productive life going forward that can give them more joy. You see, not everybody has come in contact with their sense of inner purpose like you have. Not everybody has.
Well, okay. But and you make a very good point there about having purpose. However, I was asked this question only a couple of years ago by my parents who violated that lifespan rule. They're now in their, my dad is 87, my mother is 84. Mm-hmm. So they are on the wrong side of this equation in the manner of speaking, although, hey, they paid in during their years, so they're entitled to reap those benefits. I'm sure my mother or my father somehow, they must have set up some kind of retirement plan many years ago. But here's the question that was posed to me by my mother. So, Richard, how are you doing on a retirement plan? What retirement plan? And I will tell you, honestly, I don't have one. I don't have a 401k. I'm not socking money away. The only retirement plan I have is, if I chose to use it, is either I continue to work and earn a living, or collect Social Security when I reach 67 or 70. Now, there will be those who say, yeah, well, it may not be there when you get there. I beg to differ. I was told Social Security wasn't going to be there when I was in my teens in the 70s. They said that it wasn't going to be there in the 80s. Then in the 80s, it wasn't going to be there in the 90s. In the 90s, and so on and so forth. It's still there. Now, if it's not there, you know, hey, we adapt, right? But there are
a
lot of people.
You're bringing up a very important point. And finances are chiefly important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they need to figure out how. That is not my area of expertise.
No, I understand.
So I just need to say that I feel as though it's a scary situation for many people, mm-hmm. how they're financially going to get through.
Yeah.
And it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you can't pay your bills, how can you be concerned with deep psychological things, new athletic things, you know, flexing your social muscle?
Yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's that that isn't the area that I'm an expert in that can offer advice.
No, and I understand. And it wasn't so much asking advice. It was just basically saying that there are so many elements. And one of the things that you talk about, for example, in the Great Eight coaching approach, having to do with a wonderful little equation called readiness plus opportunity equals success. Well,
exactly.
On the one hand, from a mental and or psychological standpoint, maybe even I could go as far as saying a spiritual standpoint, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
I've even told people that if I dropped dead today, I got hit by a truck today or whatever came along, I'm good. I'm ready to go. I'm only 58. God willing, I will live to, you know, maybe 108, maybe 98. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But if it were today, I'm good. I've got. I'm taken care of from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's more intellectualizing.
That brings up something deep, and I think one of the building blocks is one I'd like to talk about.
Please,
now, if it's okay.
Go ahead.
And it's the one called "Your Life Force Never Retires."
Okay.
And research is recently showing this very interesting thing. We think of young people as having psychological flexibility and openness to maybe finding out who they are and working on their problems. But what we're finding out is that people in their 60s, 70s, 80s often have a lot of psychological flexibility and openness. And this is when a lot of deep work can happen. One man I met with, it was unbelievable. He had headed up two companies, very successful financially. He'd had two divorces. But he said that he was never able to have good relationships because he feels like he was very egotistical, a bully, self-centered. He realized he had bullied employees. He had bad relationships with his children. And he woke up to all that. And he decided, he went into deep counseling. And he came out, he wrote letters of apology to people. He met with all of his children and grandchildren and said, I know you think of grandpa as a successful man. I set up college funds for you. But I also know that I've had mean sides to me, and I don't want to have that legacy continued in our family. And he made apologies to people. And his last 5 years of life were very happy ones.
Well, go ahead.
So I just want to point out that there – many times when people have the time, they're no longer working full time, they don't have family responsibilities, they don't necessarily need to go to counseling. There are many ways to do this kind of inner and deep work and come to better peace with oneself. But that's a gift that many people can have. And one of the resources that I read in doing my research was this hospital chaplain who worked with people when they were dying. And the thing that was bothering a lot of them was unresolved relationships. Family relationships, friendship relationships, lover relationships, relationships. It was all about relationships. And the misgivings that people had were not about their jobs and career and bodybuilding and amassing wealth. It was about relationships. And so there's this section called Your Life Force Never Retires that has hit home for a lot of people. And the idea that psychological flexibility can be very alive and well in older people.
I know that when having the great opportunity to actually interview my parents on this program, which has not aired due to the request by my parents not to have it air, maybe after their passing in 15, 20 years, I might be able to do that. But in that conversation, we talked about friends. We talked about acquaintances and how we saw so many different people coming through our home. and the connection that, my parents had. We even had uncles who weren't really uncles. They were just very good friends of my father, my mother, who they're still, those who are left behind, are still good friends with. And that was so important to them that they had those. And I've often felt that same way. Regardless of what your age is, you need to develop that kind of network. I mean,
well,
I just
Richard, you point very well to this other second most important chapter, and it's called "You Gotta Have Friends."
Yeah,
and the idea that, you know, in England now they have a ministry of loneliness.
No, really?
They have a ministry of loneliness because they've recognized that they have people dying of loneliness. And so what this ministry does is actually go neighborhood by neighborhood. They have like these social workers and they set up communities and they set up like these nightclubs for like a Friday night at 6 p.m. with music, food, dancing, and getting together the older people in a given community. And these people are coming back alive. It's like that old movie with Robin Williams, Awakenings. You know what I mean?
I remember
that
one.
But the point is, we are discovering that humans really do need humans. And that other muscle, in addition to the psychological one that we need to learn to flex and use better, is our social muscle. And at the end of each chapter, I give three examples of people effectuating on this particular strategy. And then after that, you apply it to yourself. But one of the examples that I loved was this woman who retired. She was a real estate executive and her husband then died. Two of her best friends died. And here she was planning on spending her time with them. And she became very depressed. And then she got this idea. She went online into like a meetup to find other women to walk with. She said, well, I may not be able to create best friends, but I got to have people.
Yeah.
And through that, she started. I mean, so it's really an important muscle to exercise, our social muscle. For those of us lucky enough to have a lot of friends and family and people in our lives, fine. But what my mother did that I found fascinating is her life became smaller. She lived till 87. In the last 5 years, she started becoming very good friends with the clerk in the supermarket, the manager of her apartment complex, the postman, because these were people who were in her life. So she didn't consciously say, oh, I got to have more friends. But she naturally built social relations with the people right there with her.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. I'd go with her to the supermarket and everybody would say, oh, you must be Marilyn's daughter. I mean, she had real friends. Now, you might call them social acquaintances, but they were people who knew her, who looked forward to seeing her, who made her feel good when she walked in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was one of her adaptive mechanisms for living so long. She had smoked for 50 years. How the heck did she live so long? And I think one of them was her adaptive ability to make friends with people who happen to be around.
Mm. You know, you mentioned something here that I wanted to touch upon, and you sort of touched upon it a little bit. Because there was a public service announcement I saw on television some years ago, and I thought it was great. Now, the PSA was accused of being rather sexist. That is not the intent of my explanation or description here, but more to the point of one of your chapter titles. And the dialogue in there. The public service announcement opens up with a young boy, a little kid, maybe he's 5-6 years of age, and he's playing in the dirt with his trucks, dump truck and his, you know, the backhoe and those kinds of things, like construction and what have you. The next scene is of an adult wearing a hard hat, wearing a tie and so forth. And he's got blueprints in his hand. And he's directing people to do this, that, and the other thing. Next scene is a little girl. She's playing with her dollies and she's got these little popsicle sticks like tongue depressors. And she's sort of giving the doll an exam, right?
Right.
Then the next scene, it's an adult female, and she is in the ER, and she is taking care of trauma cases and so forth. You talk here in chapter one, in the beginning, reclaiming your childhood interests. Now, I understand where you're coming from for those who are headed for retirement, but that seems to me like great advice for anybody who is headed upward in age, even if they're a teen, 20, 30, 40, 50, and then above, that when you, and I have to say that I'm one of the fortunate ones that I got lucky in one sense. I've always considered myself at the right place at the right time. I got into the career. I didn't expect it when I was in eighth grade, in spite of the what are you going to do when you grow up paper I had to write. And it was about broadcasting. I even went and interviewed a broadcaster locally. Yeah. And then great. I forgot about it all through high school and so forth. And yet, boom, here I am.
Yes.
And it seems to me that if we were to take the approach of doing that wherever we are right now, whether we're in retirement age or otherwise, then when we get to that retirement age, we already know the direction we're going. But let's go ahead and pick it up in reference to
retirement age. Richard, I would like to suggest that we dip in on a regular basis. This chapter started because I've studied a lot of psychology, and it's a Jungian idea that always resonated with me, and that is this. Your essential self never changes throughout life. So let's, like you, you're a communicator, okay? That's what you are. Joan, I'm a communicator and I'm a people person. And then I have a lot of energy to empower people. That's what I'm interested in doing. When I was a kid, guess what? Everybody in my family were all introverts and I was out there. I knew everybody in the neighborhood. I was the ringleader of the kids. I was a very outgoing person. Kids would line up to discuss their problems with me. And then naturally, I'm a coach and an author, and I inspire, hopefully, and animate people in their lives. So when people go back to reclaim their childhood essence, they get happy. I just had my first revitalment workshop, and that was one of the most popular chapters. And you should see what came out of it. This one woman, who her husband is now dying, and she's going through a tough time, and she remembered all of a sudden the happy times singing with her sister who died a number of years ago. But she's decided she's going to join a choral group that singing really made her so happy, and she'd forgotten. So it was so wonderful to see her light up remembering these happy times. So I think dipping into our childhood natural interests is a way to animate our lives today. We really don't go that far from them. And so it's really an essential thing. And I think Jung had the right idea with that. But many times it's because of life pressures and circumstances, we get away from our natural selves. I went to college with a woman who was a poet. You could see she was a poet, but her father insisted she become a CPA. He was a CPA. Well, she had to go through a bout of alcoholism and two bad marriages. And guess what? She's a poet. She was a poet from an early age. So I think getting to our essential selves and owning that and animating that is really important in having a full life, feeling a life of meaning, purpose, and fun.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. It just seems to me that our society in the West, and specifically here in the United States, is of the mindset that we have to carry on the family name and legacy. And, of course, then that also implies and includes whatever the career was. I mean, my father, he was a printer. He worked for years. Before that, he was an appliance repairman and so forth. And as a printer, I mean, I still remember when he would come home from work and you could smell the ink on his jacket, only because that was what was wafting through the print shop where he would print checks and so forth. And, you know, I remember even learning about printing. When I was in high school, I took a vocational course and they had us do typesetting. And I learned how to both typeset and learn how to read backwards and upside down, because you had to. That was the way it was done. But his greatest advice to me as a teenager was, be sure you get into a job that you love doing, because you're going to be doing it for the rest of your life or for a long time. Don't get stuck. This is the way he phrased it. Don't get stuck like I did. Well, he didn't get stuck. He didn't get stuck, because then he went to junior college, got his computer programming degree, and moved on from there, and has always had a love for computers. I mean, he and I have wonderful sessions over the phone and so forth. I mean, I still remember
that saying, readiness plus opportunity equals success.
Exactly.
He was ready. He seized that opportunity and he got happy and successful in a field that resonated with his basic interests and capabilities even more.
Yeah. And of course, I know that for some folks, retirement, as the term goes, And I can't think of any other word.
Let's call it revitalment. Okay?
Revitalment. Okay, let's coin a new phrase here. Revitalment.
Yes. Revitalment.
Can be very scary for a lot of folks, whether it's because they don't have a nest egg saved up over the years.
Right.
Or because they don't know what the heck they're going to do. I mean, see, that's probably the biggest thing for me.
Well,
is
you know what
if
I
retired,
say about this? What I want to say about this, I think the best insurance in life is actually not, you know, with John Hancock or any of those corporations that write you a check. The best insurance on any level is people. And I know one time I had to have 2 foot surgeries and I couldn't get out of bed. My husband had to leave for work early and I couldn't believe it. My women friends rallied around, this is 25 years ago, and they set up a schedule to come in the morning and bring me breakfast upstairs because I couldn't get out of bed. And that was better insurance. No money could have given me what I needed, right? So the insurance of having people who care about you, developing community, is the best thing you can do. And that even addresses some of the financial things, because if you have people who really care about you, they're going to, sorry for my dogs, they're going to make sure you have what you need.
Yeah. Well, I think that's extremely important. We're talking with Joan Tabb, and she is talking with us today about building blocks for the new retirement or revitalment. It's an easy, interactive 8-step guide for a retirement with meaning, purpose, and fun. And that is the keystroke right there, is having some fun with your life. I'm still trying to do that, and I'm not even retired. As I said before, I don't have any plans on doing just that. I figure my retirement actually will come the day that my essence leaves the body and the body just collapses. We're going to continue talking more with Joan, but I want to let you know of her website, which is, believe it or not, greatin8coaching.com, greatin8coaching.com. And we want you to stay right where you are. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
I told you we'd be right back. It doesn't take long, just a few minutes, a few messages, and we continue on with our conversation with Joan Tabb, and she's also the author of Great In 8, which is job-seeking skills, which is paramount here. That's another issue that we're dealing with, folks who aren't really ready, Joan, for retirement.
Yeah, what I want to tell you for a minute is about that first book.
Yes.
I did that book. It was right after the downturn and everybody had lost their jobs.
Yes.
And I was in Silicon Valley. And I mean, and my son was small, and you should have seen all the people devastated. I mean, people had to lose homes. There were divorces. It was just a horrible situation. So I went to the head of my son's school and I said, you know, I have a background in training and program building. I'd like to set up employment networks to help people get back to work. And I said to my husband, I'm not going to earn any money for the next 2 years. I want to help people get back to work.
Yeah.
So what I did is I built these employment networks. The model worked. It was leveraging off the people who are well-employed to help the people who are unemployed. Then in doing this, because I have this background in training, I was able to observe that there were 8 things, like the magic number 8 for me.
Mm-hmm.
There were 8 things that separated the good job seekers who were not getting jobs from the great job seekers who were getting the work. So I felt that I had to write this up for people. And that's that first book. And it's still relevant today. It's 10 years later. And those skills, those extraordinary 8 skills, still make a difference. And I still use them in my practice. Well, after I did that for a while, Congresswoman Jackie Speier found out about me, and she had me as the keynote to help a lot of people in our San Mateo County get started. And then she said, Joan, what do you want to do in your life? You really are a motivator. I said, you know what? And that's when I said, I'm going to help people get to work, and that's going to be my profession. So I became an executive and a career coach, but I also have always taken some people pro bono too. So I can, you know, do a sliding scale thing. I said to my husband, I don't want to move up to the next fancy house. You know, I'm not going to make the money that I made in the corporate world. I made a trade-off, and he agreed with me. So I think I've been following what feels like I need to do in this world. And that leads to that building block called service, legacy, and give back. And I think that's a very important one. And what I found is that the reason a lot of people don't do that, Richard, is that they don't know how to get started. So I like to say, if you want to get involved with the broader world and bigger ideas, first decide what topics really matter to you. Is it politics? Is it the environment? Is it education? Is it hunger? Is it health? And then what I did on the back of the book, in the reference section, there are two full pages of ways you can plug in and get involved. Because I realized a big gap was that people might have the desire to get involved to help the world, but they don't know how to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. And that's what we encourage people to do here on this program, is to get involved in whatever way they can.
And when I interview those 100-plus people and I ask where their greatest parts of joy came from in their life, greatest sense of joy, almost all of them mentioned some kind of being of service work. Almost all of them. Yes, they mentioned time with family and friends. But sometimes they even mention the work they did as the number one. I was in Park City, Utah, and I interviewed some people in their 70s who now work with veterans, wounded veterans on the ski slopes, and they get so much joy out of that. I met with people who work with deaf students, and they were trained, and they get a lot of joy out of that. I met retired nurses who now travel the world on emergency Red Cross trips. I mean, the joy that you get. I spent, for years, I spent half a day a week at a third grade class that I adopt every year, and I bring in all the art and literacy materials, and I do a whole curriculum for a full year. And each child ends up with a beautiful collection of art books and an art portfolio, and they can read the books. The funniest part is that I say, listen, Ms. Joan is giving you the book, but you need to earn it by reading it to three people. Mm-hmm. So they have to write the three people they read it to. Of course, they ask, can they read it to their dog? And I say, yes. Well, I get some overachievers. One little boy now, he read the first book on Frida Kahlo to 33 people.
Wow.
So but it's so much fun. I mean, these kids, when they see me come in, it's Ms. Joan, we're going to have fun. Well, we learn a lot, and we do art, and we read. But it's such a great source of joy in my life. It's third grade class that I adopt every year in a very low-income area near me.
Yeah.
And I see such extraordinary, every single time, and I'm always telling my husband, there's always two or three incredibly bright, motivated children and two or three incredibly talented artistic children.
Yeah.
And I always want to see that they can go on and further develop that.
Okay, now, you've raised a subject that I want to dive into. I know you may not be an expert in it, but I'm sure that you can talk about it.
Okay.
And that is the level of illiteracy amongst the elderly, amongst the revitalized, if you will. I came up with a phrase 30 or 40 years ago in my interviewing to describe those who are, say, in the retirement years. They often are referred to as senior citizens. I can't coin a different phrase, seasoned citizens.
That's good.
But talk to me about the level of literacy or illiteracy and how we're making some strides, because I'm amazed that anybody in their 70s or 80s would have anything to do with, I want to go ahead and get my GED because I really messed up when I was a teen and I didn't finish and I really didn't learn how to read and write and do math and those kinds of things, and yet they go after it.
I have to say, Richard, I don't know much about that topic. I probably read, you've read about it, but I'm not up on that. I mean, I know that with people coming from other countries, we have a lot of literacy programs in libraries for elderly people who haven't learned how to read.
Right.
But I wouldn't say that's an area. My mother got involved with that a lot, adult literacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was a lifelong volunteer, and then she ended up helping some people's families and things like that.
Right.
But I feel as though if there are people out here listening who have literacy issues, going to the local library, most of them have excellent programs for that. And then also the junior colleges usually do too.
Well, I know that you have step seven, the best practices in adult learning, including the four quadrant learning process, which we can talk about.
Yes.
But one of the reason I bring it up is because I'm a very, very strong advocate that for everyone, I mean everyone, getting an education. And I posed that to a professor at a local college here in Santa Barbara, and he said, no, because some people are just stupid. And I thought, whoa, hold it. But here's the reason why I'm a strong advocate. Because if you don't have that education, You don't know that you have all of these different choices. You don't know that the book Building Blocks for a New Retirement by Joan Tabb is available because you haven't found out that there's a radio program or there's a website you don't know that you have these choices, how can you choose them to go then further?
Well, and I thought you were going to bring something else up. We live in a society in America where everybody has the vote. We're a great experiment in democracy.
That's
but
what they say.
It's all dependent on an educated electorate.
Yeah.
So we want to have citizens who not only can read, but have critical thinking skills so they can't be bamboozled.
Exactly.
Remember Abraham Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time, but you can fool some of the people all the time. I'm not going to get into my political views here.
No.
We all have to be very careful about political leaders who might say one thing and do another, and people who don't have critical thinking skills aren't recognizing that they're being bamboozled.
Or say one thing today and something different tomorrow.
Exactly.
Or the old flip-flop, as they say.
Or lie. And so I think that we need an educated public for many, many reasons. So I think literacy, I mean, that's why, just so you know, there's a reason I deliberately work in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
Up until third grade, they're learning to read. After third grade, they're reading to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So let that sink in for a minute.
Yeah.
They're learning the skills of literacy up through third grade. It's all about learning to read.
Yeah.
After that, it's assumed the children know how to read. So now they're being introduced to much more serious subject matter and academic topics. So if we lose them by the end of third grade, we've lost them. And that's when a lot of delinquency happens. That's when a lot of behavioral problems happen because of the frustration.
Yeah.
So I deliberately do my work, my intervention in third grade, because I want to make sure every child that I'm involved with gets basic literacy skills by the end of the year.
Okay.
And where there are children lagging behind, I come back and work with them one-on-one.
You know, it's one of the reasons why I believe, too, that so many families, one generation after another, continue down the entitlement path. Granted, as a teenager, I was 18, out of high school, just graduated, and I was on public assistance for about a year, maybe a year and a half. It was awful because of the requirements necessary, but I was grateful that it was there and it got me through that interim. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. there are families, Jen, as I said, generation after generation, because
cycle
of the lack of education, they
That's
don't
right.
know that there's anything else other than entitlements.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I applaud you, standing ovation to you, because I think that what you're doing is a marvelous thing, and we need to educate everybody. This is
on the one hand, like if you can see on the left side, we mm-hmm. need basic literacy.
Yes.
But if you go all the way up, mm-hmm. we also need people to use what's in them. And that's what the building blocks are all about.
Yeah.
I contend that there's so much potential. Like when I'm in that classroom and I see these super bright kids and I'm hoping that they'll be able to develop their talents in the same way as I'm all about activating people once they're no longer in their primary career. We have this new period of life I call revitalment. That's after your primary career years are over, but before true old age. That's the new period, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
We never had that before. And there's also an opportunity to give back. Like one of the groups I recommend, it's called Elder Circles. We've got to re-educate older people of their value. And what they do in these Elder Circles is they have people come to realize and come to reckon with the insights, skills, experience, wisdom they have, and then help them bring it back into society. Because we're a society that has revered youth. Like you weren't even conscious of it, but you said, I feel like I'm 18.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our culture, 18 is good. In a lot of cultures that revere older age, they'd say, who wants to be 18? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot. So one of the people I interviewed for the book actually came up with a new word, and I included it. You may have seen it. It's called lifelines. He has been married for 60 years to his wife, and he came up with the idea of lifelines. He goes, because she said, I can't stand these wrinkles. He said, they're not wrinkles, honey. They're lifelines. And every single one of them is an avenue or a freeway or a path to deep memories we've had together.
Yeah.
And I love looking at that face. And I bring up that Rembrandt, he did a lot of self-portraits because that was the cheapest model himself. He didn't have a lot of money for years. And as you watch the sequence of his paintings and his self-portraits, they get more and more interesting.
Yeah.
So instead of looking at a face and going to a plastic surgeon, the plastic surgeon says, what's wrong with your face? Oh, I have the lines here and I have the... Instead of looking at it that way, you can say, wow, what interesting life you must have had. Look at those lifelines. And we revere that. And I remember I had an incredible grandma who I spent a lot of time with. And I loved, like, her fingers. I could push them down and it would take a while to come back. And I just, and I loved her face and the wrinkles there. I wasn't told it was bad. I was a little girl. I mean, I loved this woman. She gave me such love and care and nurturing. And I love that face. I had to be culturally trained to not like a face like that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
These are all social constructs.
Well,
and so people, and there's a chapter in the book on your physical self, your health, and I divide it into three areas. One is medical conditions that you've got to maintain. We're only given one body this lifetime, and as we get older, it usually requires more care. So the first level is medical conditions. The second is lifestyle. You know, we got to up our game, you know, the whole thing about hydration. Most people over the age of 45 who go into ER and go in the hospital are dehydrated. So hydrating ourselves becomes majorly important, and the nutrition becomes important. Exercise becomes important. But the third area I bring up in my chapter on health is your relationship to your appearance and deciding that you only you can decide what you want to change or learn to accept. One woman I interviewed said, I couldn't stand it that I got these wrinkles. My son was getting married. We were going to have 200 people in from all over. And she said, I got a facelift and I'm glad I did. And I wanted to look great in those pictures. But she said, after that, I'm not doing it anymore. But she made a very conscious decision that she was going to do one facelift and then no Botox, no anything. But everybody has to decide. And I'm just suggesting you be conscious of the choices you're making.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you
and
more.
And to go beyond the social constructs that our society gives you and decide for yourself what's important. Like the women, I actually had the women, there were six women here for my first Revitalment workshop. And what they decided is they're going to focus more on living life from the inside out than the outside in. Like one of them said, I don't like the way I look anymore. And I'm just saying to people, no more pictures, period. I'm not going to be in photographs. Because I want to live from the inside out, and I don't want to see my appearance. Well, that's her choice, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, it's again, very interesting. It's very interesting to take a look at all of these different aspects. I of course, am always intrigued by, but you made a very good point earlier, but intrigued by, you know, pursuing that self-growth, that inner growth to better oneself. But again, if you're worried about just getting from one day to the next financially and so forth, you know, that kind of goes by the wayside.
Yeah.
You're only able to take a look at that when you reach that space where you're now financially better off than you were, and so forth. So it's really interesting. We're talking with Joan Tabb. She's the author of Building Blocks for New Retirement, an easy, interactive 8-step guide for a retirement with meaning, purpose, and fun. And, of course, I was referring just a moment ago to meaning. And I've often said this on the program that I don't know where it comes from, Joan, but somewhere inside I know that my life has meaning.
Yes.
I don't know why or where. All I know is that if I don't take that tack, if my life has no meaning, okay, if I didn't have that inside of me, I could leave here, go out, rape, pillage, and plunder because it doesn't matter. Life has no meaning. This is all an accident. But there's something inside of me that says, no, my life does have meaning. It has purpose. I need to be about service and so forth. And then that's what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to go out there and rape, pillage, and plunder because that's not what my life is about. And yet there are a lot of folks who do get stuck. And I think that has a lot to do with that education that we're talking about up to and including up to third grade. When you don't get that, you don't care about personal growth. You're just, we talk about, we use this phrase. We want to move from survival mode to thrival mode.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Are you seeing that with a lot of
that's the whole point of this book. Mm-hmm. I'm telling people you have opportunity. Don't just buy into the social messages that you've gotten that you look old and you're out on the wayside. No, this can be a time for fantastic opportunity. And here are some ways to create it. And here are some examples of people who have done it in the different categories. And then let's have you apply this to your life. I want to activate people. Remember the human potential movement?
Oh, yeah, I was part of it.
And I'm still in it. Okay. I, as soon as I heard about that as a young teen, I said, that's what I'm about. I'm about human potential. Let's use what's in us. Like I felt like when I was at my mother's deathbed at 87 and her body looked really old. And I thought, you know what? I'm proud of you, Mom. She lived a full life and she used it all up and died. And that's what I'm hoping. I want to use everything that's in me. I want to use all the talents, experiences, you know, the insights. I want to use what's in me. When I'm in that classroom with those kids and I'm animating them and teaching them and having fun with them, and I bring in a big pillow that's a ball that looks like the globe and I show them where we are in the world and I explain things, I'm using what's in me. I'm sharing my knowledge and my excitement. And I want to suggest that people do that, that there's so much to do out in this world. You just go to your local school and become a volunteer. It's so easy to get involved, but it's not so easy if you see it as a big gap and you don't know how to do it. So I want to help turn people on to what they're interested in, that first section of your essential self, and then activate them to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a struggle, even if you have the education, because then you're also bombarded by all the other stuff. I remember about 20 years ago, I used to think that I was no longer cared about, not that this mattered that much, but it was an interesting observation. I no longer was cared about by the advertising industry. Because I was outside that age range where they gave it
demographics any longer.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Weren't their target audience.
Exactly. But Now here I am 58 and I'm sitting here going, wow, they really do care about me now because I'm, by the way, speaking of which, I was doing some research and trying to work with my vendors, like my cell phone service, electric companies, so forth, saying, hey, is there any way I can lower my bill? And the woman said, well, there is a plan here, but I have to ask you this question, and I do not want to offend you. I said, don't worry about it. Go ahead and ask the question. She says, how old are you? I said, well, I'm 58. Did not know this, and I'm going to share this with the rest of the world. Verizon Wireless has a discount for anybody 55 or older.
I didn't know that. I'm with Verizon. I want to get my discount.
Call them
too.
After this interview and say,
yes.
"Hey, I want the retirement
Thank
discount."
Thank you, Richard. You just saved me some money.
You
hopefully.
Betcha. But here's the thing: everybody puts that mark, that demarcation of retirement, if you will, or seasoned citizen, at a different level. I mean, I've talked with that. We hold a senior expo here in Santa
it could
Barbara
be 55,
every year.
It 55, could be
55, 60,
yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So you know, but. What can it hurt? But I think that what's interesting is that, I'm now back in the in crowd.
They're going to try to sell you a hearing aid soon, okay? Just be aware.
And I'll basically say, huh? What? I can't hear you.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to go back to something else, Richard.
Please.
You know, talking on the finance. I'm not an expert in finance, but I do know that what a lot of older people are doing, and they have one here in my community in Santa Rosa, California, they're setting up more of these communal lifestyles. They're not communes like in the 60s, but what they are is it's to share economic resources and to create more social opportunities. So people have their own little, you know, it's a studio apartment, it's a one bedroom, and then there are communal areas. So they share washer dryer, they share the garden. It's a lot less expensive when people live that way, plus it adds to the social fabric. And say, and I know a couple of older women who live in this and they had limited incomes, and they also are like the babysitters, the live-in babysitters, and then they get to be with the children in the community and build relationships. So we're seeing a lot more lifestyle housing options being set up, and some of these are lower cost because it's sharing so many resources. So to look for those also.
Mm. Well, you know,
I mean, we're seeing a lot of people turn their apartments or homes into Airbnb so they can get an extra income. Well, this is an extension of that idea of communal living. Did you know that?
I was not aware of that, but yeah. There's a village north of Nevada City. My wife and I visited it 2 years ago over the holidays, and it's called Ananda Village. Now, yes, it is associated with a particular
spiritual community.
But when we were there visiting, and I was actually interviewing the couple that headed up, I'm thinking, yeah, I like this. This would be fantastic if I could, because with the internet and wireless and all of this kind of stuff, I would still be able to do the radio shows and on and on and on and on. And I could live in a place. I mean, we live right now in the mountains above Santa Barbara. We live up on what's called San Marcos Pass or the Highway 154. And we literally live at the summit. And I love it up there. It's in a rural. It's in the rural part. It's the southern part of the Los Padres National Forest. We have a beautiful valley view. We are secluded and isolated. I mean, I have to play FAA, if you will, when I have people come over. I have to go out to the main drag, the Stagecoach Road, to guide them in. Mm-hmm. And so, which is kind of nice. And it's just one of those things where, that would be ideal. Now, I know that a lot of folks, they like living in the city. So, obviously, there are going to be communities like that.
They're setting up communal lifestyle situations in cities, too. Number one, it's to address the economics. But number two, it's for the social life enhancement, which is huge. And then the other thing is it's environmentally smart because you don't have to buy as many toasters and washer dryers and all that stuff. Your appliances can be combined. You can have fewer vehicles. I mean, there's a lot written about this whole area. It's a whole movement that's happening that, as I said, is purposeful and helpful on an economic level. It's helpful on a social level. It makes for a lot more sort of intergenerational possibility, too. And we need to see that more and more. It's a very helpful aspect. Like when I come into the classroom, I actually am a few years older than you, and the children will say, "How old are you?" And I'll say, "I'm 63." They go, "Wow, that's old." And then the teacher says, "Yeah, but look at Joan. She still looks young and vital, and she goes hiking." And they go, "Wow." You're like, it's opening up a way for them to see what age can be like,
well,
right?
Have you seen some of the advertisements these days specifically for cosmetics? I
for
forget
older
which
people.
Which yeah for which yeah. I can't remember which one yeah. L'Oreal or yeah. whatever yeah. or CoverGirl.
A lot
Girl.
Of them are doing that now.
Yeah, and there's this all of a sudden this woman shows up. She's got white hair, good looking woman, and I'm going, wow, now that's pretty cool.
Well, they're trying to change the face of beauty, but you also have to be careful there. But guess what? Some of the magazines have pushed back and say we won't take the term anti-aging anymore. There's no such thing as anti-aging. If you live, you get older. So they're no longer using anti-aging. What I like is when they say, let's enhance the looks at any age. Instead of trying to get rid of a wrinkle or this or that, let's enhance the look. Let's try to make it aesthetically pleasing at any age, right? It's like the same thing in fashion. There are a lot of heavy people, and especially there are a lot of heavy teenagers. But now they're trying, of course, it's a marketing thing, but they are trying to make these young men and women feel better by creating clothing that can make them look better.
Yeah.
So it's a push-pull. I mean, do we just accept that people are older looking, or do we say, no, we have to enhance it? You know, it's a push-pull, and it also depends on the marketing. We live in a capitalistic society. People try to make money off any demographic opportunity, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it's just the way it is. But I am going to have to wrap because, believe it or not, I have to go to an interview
All right.
this
well,
morning, too.
Well, very
because
good.
Because you know what, Richard? The good news is this is a very important topic today, and a lot of people are interested in discussing it and learning about it because 10,000 baby boomers a day are retiring. That's a lot of people.
First of all, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And if you find yourself down here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to continue this conversation.
Oh, thank you. I would love to do that. And I love that area.
Also want to remind our listeners that you can go to her website. And that website that I have listed here is actually JoanTabb. There's also JoanTabb, JoanTabb.com. Or you can also get information about The Great Eight and also the book, Building Blocks. And before we let you go, if I can ask you three final quick questions, and then I'm going to let you go. And
sure.
Again, thank you so much.
Yes.
The first question is, who is JoanTabb?
Joan Tabb is a coach, an empowerer, a person of heart and mind, and a person who likes to love and live fully.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to activate and animate older people to live a life of purpose, meaning, and fun, and get to reservoirs of opportunity they had never considered.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to animate and empower other people and to bring the positive energy that I was born with, to share that and light up the world with it through education and insight.
Joan Tabb, I want to thank you once again for joining us here on the program. And we look forward to having you back again, because, again, there's so much
thank
more
you,
to
Richard.
Talk about.
You're terrific. I love what you're doing. Keep on doing it. OK,
well, thank you very much. I'm
thank
Richard
you.
Dugan.
This was a great show. And you asked the best questions of any interviewer I've had so far.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Don't make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.